Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the First Bank of Nigeria full year 2011 and first quarter 2012 financial results conference call. Following the formal presentation by the First Bank of Nigeria management team, an interactive Q&A session will be available. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. Bisi Onanisanya, Group Managing Director. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to welcome everybody to this conference call. My name is Bisi Onanisanya, the Group CEO. I have in the room with me today Remy Odunlami, the Chief Risk Officer.
Good afternoon.
I have with me Bayo. Bayo is the CFO. Yes. I also have with me Onche. Onche is the Chief Strategy Officer.
Good afternoon.
I also have with me Uke Eke, who is an Executive Director.
Good afternoon.
Of course, Yemisi is standing by, and I have the treasurer with me in case there are questions bordering on our treasury activities. This conference call would display and discuss numbers on our FYE 2011 numbers, which were prepared in accordance with NGAAP, that's Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. We would also take time to run through our Q1 2012 numbers, which were prepared in accordance with the IFRS, using the IFRS standard. We'll start the presentation. On slide four is a brief overview of the First Bank Group. It's a very diversified financial services group with 12 subsidiaries, including offices in South Africa, China, Abu Dhabi, with plans also to roll out into other parts of Africa. We also have a bank in Democratic Republic of Congo, in addition to our presence in the United Kingdom. This therefore makes us one of the most diversified financial conglomerates on the African continent. Moving into the next slide, which is slide five, we are happy to announce that in 2011, we made very good progress towards achieving our broader strategic imperatives. The highlights of the results are provided. We achieved in 2011 very strong deposit growth of 34.3% year-on-year, which is above industry growth rate average. We also were able to expand our net interest margin from 6% to 8% in spite of the challenges in the Nigerian interest rate environment. We also improved on our efficiency levels with our cost-income ratio dropping 10% from 67% in 2010 to 57% at the end of 2011. We were also able, due to very deliberate strategic steps, to increase our business volumes and our share of the market. As at FYE 2011, we had 14% market share of total assets and 16% share of the loan book in the Nigerian banking sector. Going forward, our strategic focus includes specific areas meant to drive up growth and efficiency whilst also improving on service excellence. These two pillars of our strategic objectives are anchored on performance management and talent management. The results are beginning to be evident from our 2012 numbers, which will be discussed later. On the outlook for the Nigerian economy, we think it's very positive. The banking industry made significant change in the reporting requirements by moving in Q1 2012 into the IFRS reporting format, which makes it easier for comparative data between Nigeria and other parts of the world. We also witnessed improvements and reduction in non-performing loans, which reduced from 18% in 2009 to an average of 9% at the end of 2011. These arose mainly from some of the activities of the central bank in cleaning up the banking sector. We expect that with the resolution of the banking crisis, competition will be stiffer in 2012, but we are prepared. The whole essence of our transformation, which we started about 2-3 years ago, were aimed at ensuring that when competition begins to be tougher, we are on top of our game and we also are able to defend our market leadership. On this note, I will hand over to the CFO Bayo to take us through the full year 2011 numbers and talk briefly also on our Q1 2012 numbers. Bayo, over to you.
Good afternoon. My name is Bayo Adelabo, the Group CFO. I'll be taking the presentation on the financial results for the two periods. That's the audited results for 31st December 2011 and the unaudited IFRS results for the first quarter of 2012 financial year. The presentation for the full year number runs from slide 8 to 17, while that of the Q1 numbers runs from 19 to 25. On slide 8, where we have a brief highlight of the building block to the income statement for year 2011. The slide shows an impressive traction in revenue, with gross earnings growing by 28% and operating income growing by 46% year on year. The reduction in cost of funds boosted the operating income growth. There was also a growth in OPEX due to staff cost increase, but despite that, cost to income ratio reduced significantly to 56.8% from 67% that we recorded last year. Impairment provision was also huge compared to prior year in a bid to further clean up our books in terms of our loan books. In spite of that, and the exceptional loss of 15.5 billion that we made on our AMCON transactions, we still returned with a profit growth of 48% compared to the 2010. On slide 9, you can see that we had consistent quarterly growth in earnings at an average of 25% per quarter. This was because of the increase in the volume of underlying earning assets, and of course, we also had some higher yielding assets. The growth in revenue cut across the two lines of revenues, which is the interest income and the non-interest income. The mix also improved in favor of non-interest income, growing from 74-26 mix, from 76-24 mix to 74-26 mix in favor of non-interest income. This was due to increase in fees, due to transaction velocity, from improved customer services, from transformed processes, and some tailor-made products that we introduced and offered to customers during this period. The split by business still largely favors retail and corporate banking activities of the bank, contributing about 95%. And of course, we had encouraging growth in our investment banking revenues from the recent reorganization and the generation of that arm of our business. And we know that this will continue in future periods. Moving to slide 10. There was a 72% interest income from loan, coming from the volume increase, like mentioned earlier, and the fact that we repriced some of the assets to give us higher yield. And due to the fact that loan book is actually about 55% of our total balance sheet size, it is expected that it will represent a chunk of our income contribution. There was also 19% from interest income on treasury bills and government bonds, at the detriment of the bank placement, which was not as stable during the period in terms of yield on this instrument. For non-interest revenue, cost, commission on turnover, remittance fees, credit-related fees, and LC commission represent about 70% of our fees and commission. And we could see the trend in yield here, that there was an upward trend in the yield on earning assets for the bank, growing significantly from 8.8% in 2010 to 9.6% in 2011. Same goes with the net interest margin, which moved significantly from 6.1% in 2010 to 8.0% in 2011. That's a growth of 1.9%, which is over 30% growth in net interest margin. And this was actually facilitated not only by the increase in yield on assets, but by the reduction we were able to achieve in the cost of fund of the bank, which also moved downwards during the period from 3.2% that we recorded in 2010 down to 1.6%, which is actually one of the major strengths of First Bank. I'm on slide 11. We can see that there's an operating income growth, which is growing at a higher pace than our operating expense. That's a 13.6% quarterly growth in revenue, as against 3.3% quarterly growth in operating expenses. This was actually responsible for the lowest cost-to-income ratio the bank has achieved in recent times. The breakdown of income by business units reflects a diversified income base, with income coming from all parts of our businesses. Expense breakdown shows major contribution coming from staff costs, depreciation, deposit premium, and admin and general expenses. The drivers of admin and general expenses are actually the newly introduced AMCON levy, where the bank actually charged a sum of 6.1 billion to P&L during the period just ended. There was also an increase in our deposit insurance premium, which of course was driven by the growth that we recorded in deposit liabilities over the prior period. And of course, the growth in our activities also led to some increase in cost, even though it was properly controlled. We had our branches growing up to about 738, and we also added 111 ATMs to make total ATMs of the bank, closing at 2,411. Same goes for point of sale terminal. Moving to slide 12, we will, like I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the presentation, that our provision for losses doubled year on year from 21 billion in 2010 to 45 billion. And out of this, loan loss provision was 35 billion. The balance relates to mark-to-market adjustment on our government instruments, as well as provision for impaired other assets. Cost-to-income ratio, of course, had an alarming decline from 67% in 2010 to 57% in 2011. That is a 10% drop year on year, and we hope to sustain this in a period to come. And what led to this? We had an 89% ATM migration rate, up from 50% in 2010, with 300% growth in our e-product sign-up in branded branches. And we had a 50% reduction in our cost to serve as we grow volumes faster than operating expenses. And lastly, there was a 1 billion in annual savings expected from our centralized processing center and branch process re-engineering. We also promised to sustain this in a period to come. And moving to slide 13, profit for the year grew by 48%. Pre-exceptional item growth in profitability was also 93%. And this was due to the solid income growth that the bank recorded during this period, the declining cost of funds of the bank despite growth recorded in deposit liabilities. We had efficiency gains in our operating expenses despite activity growth. And we also migrated significant number of customers into our alternative channels. The exceptional item relates to losses sustained on our transactions with AMCON during the period. And moving to slide 14, which actually shows the performance statistics, which are exceedingly positive for the period under review. Return on average equity post-tax return grew from 10.3% to 13%. This is 30% growth in a period of 1 year. The post-tax return on average assets also grew from 1.5% to 1.8%. And of course, the dividend parameters, the earnings per share, grew from 95 kobo per share to 1 naira 40 kobo per share. This is a 56% growth in earnings per share for the bank. The dividend per share also grew by 33.33% from 60 kobo per share to 80 kobo per share. Well, of course, we ended the year with the highest dividend yield declared by any player in the industry for year 2011 at 9%, coming from a low of 4% in 2010. And moving to slide 15, which shows mix of our deposits, funding base, and our earning base. We will see that deposits and capital form 83% of the bank's funding base, which depicts a stable funding base for First Bank of Nigeria PLC. In the same vein, we have sustainable earning capacity with loans, investment, T-bills, and bonds constituting over 75% of the bank's earning assets. And these are actually assets, of course, with a good yield, as reflected in our earnings for the period. And in terms of deposit mix, we still have over 5%, as usual, in our current accounts and savings accounts as a percentage of the total deposits of the bank, with tenor deposits responsible for less than 15% of the bank's deposit base. And moving quickly to slide 16, we see that business unit contribution is diversified, showing a robust mix of retail and corporate customer mix with reasonable stability cutting across all business segments. There was an improved balance sheet leverage at 7.8% compared to 6.8% achieved last year, while loan to deposit ratio closed at 65.5% as against 83% in prior year, leaving more funds in liquid instruments, thus a stronger and stable branch. Then of course, I'm on slide 17, which shows the capital and liquidity ratio for the bank. It shows the group liquidity ratio closing at 68.2%, up from 64.9% of prior year, while the bank liquidity ratio closed at 61%, up by 5% from 55% in 2010. And the total capital adequacy ratio for the group closed at 20.4%, which depicts a strong capitalization from 20.2% of 2010, while Tier 1 ratio is 18.1%, up from 17.8% of last year. That slide ends my presentation on the full year audited account prepared under the Nigerian Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. I will use the next few minutes to give an overview of our first quarter results for 2012 prepared under International Financial Reporting Standards as required by the Financial Reporting Council and Central Bank of Nigeria for 2012 financial year. I'm on slide 19, which is a summary of the statistics coming from the performance of the first quarter. We'll see that there was a 42.5% growth in gross earnings in continuation of the performance of 2011 to 92.3 billion as against 64.8 billion in 2011 first quarter. There was also a 50.2% growth in operating income to 74.2 billion as against 49.4 billion of Q1 2011. Meanwhile, there was a drop in the contribution of non-interest income from 25% in 2011 to 21% in the first quarter 2012. This is one of the expectations of IFRS, which relates to migration of some fee-related credit revenue into interest income, as opposed to where we originally classified it in 2011, which is in our non-interest income. So we had to migrate that. In terms of profitability, there was a 101% growth in profit before tax to 28.9 billion the first quarter 2012 compared to first quarter in 2011, where we recorded a profit of 14.3 billion. This is practically doubling our profit for the quarter. Cost to income ratio was 60% as against 70% of last year. Then we have a post-tax return on equity of 27%, up from 12% disclosed or declared last year. This is actually an annualized rate. Same goes for return on average assets, which grew to 3.3% from 1.9% recorded last year. In terms of earnings per share, we had a 3 naira per share for the first quarter in 2012, annualized as against 1.49 cover in Q1 2011. And net interest margin also inched up to 9.5% as against 6.7%. This is also one of the impacts of IFRS, where effective interest rate is used with the addition of credit-related fees into our interest income. In terms of strength and liquidity of the balance sheet, there was a capital adequacy ratio of 19.9%, which is in line with what we closed with in 2011. Tier 1 ratio in as at 31st March 2012 dipped to 16.3% from 18% of 2011 December. Of course, this was due to increase in our risk-weighted assets, mainly from loan growth, foreign placement, and off-balance sheet transactions. And we believe this will improve before the end of the year. Gross loan to deposit ratio was at 64.3%, as against 81% of first quarter last year. I mean, signifying adequacy of our liquidity position. The liquidity ratio was 54.7%, as against 57.9% of Q1 2011. I will move to slide 20. Which shows the movement in our income statement for the first quarter 2012. There was a 52% increase in interest income, which was actually due to increase in volume and yield. We also had a 35% increase in interest expense, which came from volume increase in deposits and the rising trend in interest rates as we witnessed in Q1 2012 compared to Q1 2011. There was a 70% growth in our non-interest income and 16% growth in there was a 70% growth in our impairments for charges for credit losses and 16% growth in non-interest income and 23% growth in our operating expense. Of course, all this still led to a 100% growth in our profit before tax for the first quarter 2012. And a portion of this, of course, goes to restricted reserves, as will be explained further during the IFRS clarification. I'm on slide 21, which shows the 42% growth in earnings, interest constituting a higher proportion of earnings due to the IFRS adoption. We also witnessed improved yield, moving to 10.7% yield on earning assets from 8.3% of last year, improved net interest margin of 9.5% from 6.7% of last year, and there was a marginal rise in the cost of funds, moving to 2.1% from 2% of last year. And lastly here, we see that we had more revenues coming from higher-yielding T-bills and bonds for the first quarter of 2012. And let's quickly move into slide 22, which shows the profile of our operating expenses and impairment for credit losses. We see that the cost-to-income ratio reduced from 70% of last year to 60% in Q1 2012. And the profitability statistics showed our return on average equity at 27% for the first quarter of 2012, from 12% recorded last year. And same goes for return on average assets, which closed at 3.3% compared to 1.9%. On slide 23, we see the mix of the bank balance sheet in terms of funding and earnings, which is actually in line with what we closed with in 2011 December. And I also like to mention the fact that the mix of our deposit liability still remains 54% in low-cost current accounts and savings accounts and about 16% in tenured deposits. That ends the presentation on the Q1 results prepared under IFRS. But I would like to take 1 or 2 minutes to highlight a few of the differences between what we prepared under the Nigerian GAAP for the first quarter and what we are showing under the IFRS. What we have here is not exhaustive. It's just a highlight of major adjustments to our NGAAP numbers that give us the IFRS numbers. The first area is interest income, which has a difference of 8.39 billion between NGAAP and IFRS. This is on slide 25. And the adjustment to this, actually written beside it, which adjustment for interest in suspense, which we have to write back as allowed under IFRS, and the credit-related fees added back to interest income, which are now treated as part of effective interest rate, EIR, and interest subsidy on staff loans, which will now brush up into interest income. Then we have the fees and commission, which is a reduction from 18.8 billion shown under NGAAP to 15.57 billion under IFRS. And the main adjustment here, actually the credit-related fees, which are now part of EIR, and the contract is in interest income. Then we have the loan impairment provision. Under NGAAP, we adopted the prudential guidelines for licensed banks to make our provision, but using IFRS standards, there was a difference, and this difference is required not to be distributed by the Central Bank of Nigeria under the newly released prudential guidelines, and a reserve called statutory credit reserve has been created under our equity and reserve where this difference is warehoused, so it is not distributable. This takes recognition of incremental impairment charge under the IFRS model using the expected discounted cash flow from impaired assets, mainly from collateral values, which means that we considered collateral in making this provision. Then the next major adjustment here is the mark-to-market adjustment on our available-for-sale bonds, Federal Government of Nigeria bonds, where we fully charged this to P&L under NGAAP, but we adopted IAS 39 as required by the Financial Reporting Council, whereby we are allowed to make adjustments to mark-to-market AFS through the equity and not the P&L. Of course, it has the same impact as the profit is not available for restriction. I mean, this is for first-time adoption of IFRS. And as these changes, we'll let you know. Then, operating expenses. There are a number of adjustments made to operating expenses, which we also stated here. Number one is the subsidy on staff loans, which we included, as well as depreciation on the stock of unused fixed assets, which are available for use but not yet deployed. We made adjustments for that. And coming to balance sheet, the adjustments are very minimal, which on deposits, it actually has to do with interest payable on deposits, which now added to deposit balance, which is why you see the minimal difference, while interest payable on loans added back to the loan balance principal, and we have a difference of 204 million, which is why when we're making presentation on our risk management, we have adopted the balance sheet that we use under NGAAP for this presentation for the first quarter 2012. That is the end of presentation. I will hand over to the Chief Risk Officer, Ms. Remi Odolami, for the presentation on risk management.
Good afternoon. I'll be very brief. Basically, our portfolio has continued to improve over the last year. And going on to starting with slide 26, you'll note that the loan portfolio has grown through the year and into the end of the first quarter. Year-on-year growth at December is 10.5%, but that doesn't recognize the fact that we exchanged 147 billion naira of money market lines and 99 billion naira of the Seawolf loan exposure into other commercial loans. So we actually had a customer loan growth in the region of 40-41%, which is very healthy. And when we gave guidance last year on our portfolio growth, we were mindful of the fact that we're committed to winding down our money market lines. You'll also notice that, speaking about the money market line, we have worked them down over the year to 0%, with the growth, as I said, going into consumer loans, but the bulk of the growth and the bulk of our portfolio remains in term lending, which to us is anything over 12 months. We have a stable position in our overdraft line, but a lot of our trade lending is in the term exposure and commercial paper exposure, which balances out our portfolio. Looking at our performing loan book, you will note that the quality of the portfolio has improved. We went from 10.5% in the 61 to 90-day bracket to 1.2% at the year-end. The balance would have been transferred into non-performing loan. However, there is a slight deterioration in the first quarter, which is basically a function of delayed collection relating to projects, mainly real estate projects that were financed that have come to fruition, but the cash flows are not quite as robust as originally expected. but they are beginning to show in the second quarter it's beginning to turn around. By maturity, I'm very comfortable with the quality of the dispensation of our loan book. We've got 41% over 12 months and the balance of the portfolio, which is 60% due in less than 12 months. Moving on to slide 27, looking at the loans portfolio by strategic business unit, you'll notice that we've been growing our portfolio in the corporate business, which is where we believe the engine of the Nigerian economy resides. We've had some drop in the institutional banking and in the retail portfolios. The bulk of our portfolio growth has come out of the corporate banking business, which is in line with our plans and what we disclosed to you earlier on. In terms of sector exposure, there's been no material change except for the finance and insurance business, where the winding down of the money market lines means that it has dropped from being 19% of our portfolio to something that's more in the 3% range. Similarly, our downstream oil and gas, we have, in the light of experiences last year, tightened our portfolio criteria, and that has dropped from 22% of our portfolio down to 10% of our portfolio today. On the consumer products, it's essentially the same. The major difference I'd highlight is the fact that residential mortgages have dropped from 20% of our portfolio to 15%. That's not to speak to our reducing the quantum of residential mortgages that we're doing, nor to us moving out of that space, but just to the fact that we are growing more significantly the asset-backed portion of our portfolio. Moving quickly on to slide 28, asset quality. I'm happy to say our year-end NPL ratio was 2.6%. It was 2.6%, and by the first quarter, we had driven that down to 2%. The coverage, which is something we've discussed many times on this call, has improved to 113% from 104% at the end of last year. Sector exposure, again, pretty much on par with what we had in the prior comparative, with the only major difference being the consumer section, which has grown to 21% of our portfolio, of our NPL portfolio, from 13%. By SBU, the bulk of our non-performing loans are in the retail banking sector, which I think is expected, given the sheer size and quantum of people involved in that segment, and also the more risky nature of that segment. It carries a non-performing, an NPL ratio of 9.6% compared to 3.1% in the corporate banking space. Again, we price our retail loans accordingly, and we recognize the fact that there is a much higher loss norm within this segment. However, that's not to say that everything in this segment will be written off at the end of the day. It's just that in the retail segment, you see people struggle a bit more to maintain their payments at a current level. On page 29, we show you the aging analysis of our non-performing loan portfolio. Above 360 days, we've got 44%. You will ask me why we did not sell that portion to AMCON, and it's something we thought about, but the bulk of that portfolio that's outstanding now is unsecured loans or loans secured by domiciliations, where, quite honestly, we would get more out of recoveries from our own efforts than from the 5% that AMCON was prepared to pay for it. Sector NPL ratios is just information, and I don't believe too much has changed over the period. Slide 30 is information. It just gives you an idea of our risk management framework and the governance processes that go with it. I'll now hand over to Onche, who's the Chief Strategy Officer, to take you through the bank's strategy.
Thank you all. Moving to page 31, a very quick update on the restructuring that's occurring at the group level. First Bank, as you're aware, is moving to a group holding company structure. The fundamental changes that have occurred in the last few months as we've been in this process have been as follows. There is an ongoing divestiture of our registrar's business, which is currently underway. There's also a move to push the first pension custodian business under the bank for regulatory reasons, and that has been vetted with the regulators as well. And we also are definitively going to divest, or rather exit the mortgages business. However, this will be done over a time frame that will allow us to be out of that business by the middle of 2013, which is the central bank's mandated time frame to get out of the real estate development part of that business. The mortgages part of that business will be folded into the bank. It should be noted that this gives us a significant competitive advantage. Moving to the group structure, holding company structure, allows us to be significantly more competitive relative to our peers. There are only four banks in Nigeria that will be doing this, and this allows us to be very competitive on the corporate banking side with the ability to leverage the investment bank, give customers access to debt capital market products, equity capital market products, etc., even principal investing where necessary. So we very much believe in this model and are moving forward. Moving on to page 32, a quick update on subsidiaries. The largest subsidiaries in the First Bank portfolio are SBN Capital, which is the mothership, if you will, for the investment banking and asset management subsidiaries, as well as SBN Bank UK. SBN Capital had an impressive year, was an issuing house for three sub-sovereign bonds in 2011, and a major participant in the AMCON bond, as well as the federal government of Nigeria, $500 million euro bond. The FBN Capital also launched a research business and has, to great acclaim, issued a number of notable research reports, held its first annual investor conference as well. So it's really built its brand in this space, and it's establishing itself to be a primary player in the markets in Nigeria. The business has also nearly concluded its integration of the sub-businesses within it and has invested significantly in processes and systems and a risk management framework as well for the business. FBN Bank UK performed impressively despite a difficult macroeconomic environment in the UK and globally. During the year, the bank raised $120 million in a syndicated trade finance loan and also made very strong inroads on structured trade commodity finance, both regaining some lost business and also expanding the range of commodities with which we participate in. The bank once again won the West African Trade Finance Bank for the second year running and is continuing to integrate itself more tightly with the Nigerian operation, ensuring that we leverage the capabilities on both ends fully. FBN Life Assurance, we should mention briefly, is a joint venture with Sanlam from South Africa, clocked over ₦1 billion in revenue in its first full year of operations, and is projected to break even in year two, which is this year, versus 3 years initially projected in the business plan. So we're very happy about performance there, and continues to sell bank assurance through First Bank of Nigeria, and has had significant success in that respect. On page 33, we map out our financial and non-financial priorities. These came out of a strategic planning exercise that occurred last year, and as you can see, we have five financial priorities: increasing fees and commissions, selective loan creation, pricing optimization, low-cost liability growth, and OPEX containment. And five non-financial priorities: brand transformation, service excellence, credit process excellence, credit quality and process excellence, performance management, and talent management. Now, as you can see at the bottom of the page, we are well underway with respect to attaining our 2013 strategic targets. We have already met the NPL target, total asset target, and continue to push very close on the cost-to-income ratio target, continue to push very heavily on capital efficiency and getting our return on equity up to 25%. On page 34, you see a quick schematic of the new operating structure of the bank. The bank had previously operated with geography being the primary organizing axis and made a radical shift last year, with last year being the first full year of operation in this structure, where we moved to a market segment-based model, which has allowed for significantly more specialization and focus around the customer's needs. Just to give a few highlights from the different SBUs, retail consists of, and I will just go to the next few pages very quickly, retail consists of basically has been the traditional funding base for First Bank. Presently contributes about 50% of deposits. We saw a strong shift towards loan growth in retail as we tap into a huge consumer credit opportunity in retail, and also a strong push on channel expansion with significant growth in terms of POS deployment, POS devices, which has actually pushed even further this year, as well as rollout of new format of branches, which we call quick service points, small format branches that are much lighter, much cheaper to deploy, and much more ubiquitous. We also launched a number of new products, a diaspora desk targeting Nigerians in diaspora as well. There continues to be a push this year on expansion of our alternate channels and QSPs, as well as electronic banking, including a mobile money franchise that we are launching this year. Private banking is a new SBU that was launched last year. We previously had an undifferentiated model for serving the top end of the custody, our high net worth individuals. Presently, we've set up a new franchise, and it has done very well. All accounts have been retained that were inherited, and we've seen very strong growth in share of wallet, 47% growth in assets under management, some new products that have been received to great acclaim, including a Visa Internet card that has been rolled out, and all the systems and processes have been put in place. We see a very strong push this year towards integrating our franchise globally, bringing together the private bank in the UK with our private banking franchise in Nigeria, and offering a seamless end-to-end solution to the customer. In corporate banking, we've seen this has been traditionally an area that First Bank has not played in significantly. This is the mid-market corporates, which is what we refer to as corporate banking. This is a big and continued focus area for us. We saw very strong growth last year in trade finance and LCs, and also collections in this business. We saw loan growth of 56%, and of course in this segment we also price loans according to risk, so they are higher margin generally, and we expect to continue to drive income from fee and commission income tied to lending, especially short-term trade finance. We've also made strong inroads in non-oil export business within that business. In the institutional banking business, which is page 38, this has been traditionally the lending house of the bank, and has been focused on large corporate structured businesses. We've made very strong inroads in telecoms and oil and gas sector, gaining share of wallet. We significantly repriced risk assets last year across the board, which you saw in the increase in our net interest margin. Very strong growth in domiciliary deposits of 178%. And we've also introduced some new products, hedging products, for example, linked to our reserve-based lending in oil and gas, dealer finance and key distributor products and schemes for our customers there. So very strong business. We continue to push hard on structured finance and project finance and to increase the transaction banking component of that business. In public sector, we have moved from being a non-participant in this business 5 years ago to the number one spot. This has been a very successful story and was a big driver of deposit growth as well. We've gained a number of state accounts, state government accounts across the south, south, southwest, and the north. We have managed to successfully execute several PPP projects and state bond issuances in partnership with the investment bank, and are increasingly developing a model of partnering with states on their economic development agenda and providing value add beyond simply financial services, which has gotten us in very good stead with some key states in Nigeria, as well as the federal government. We continue to navigate that business as this year could be a tricky year with consolidation on some federal government accounts, the central bank, but we have a number of initiatives ongoing that will more than compensate for lost business there. On page 40, we just have a quick overview of some of the non-financial priorities. While the former part of the document is focused very much on lagging indicators and results, many of these are things that effectively take care of our long-term health as a business. Service excellence and operational excellence is one area that's worth highlighting. We had significant growth in our electronic business component of that, with all of 4.3 million cards issued, three-quarters of our retail customers having a card, and presently one out of three transactions run in Nigeria on cards being on a First Bank card. We expect ₦1 billion in annual savings from our centralized processing center rollout, and we've seen a 60% reduction in turnaround times on key transactions, key processes rather, that are CPC-enabled. We've also seen, as the CFO mentioned, a 300% growth in e-product sign-up at branches, reflecting a strong increase in point-of-sale marketing that we're doing there as well. The unit cost per transaction, as mentioned, also has declined 15%, so this is, again, witness to the fact that as we grow transactions, we're also bringing ourselves down the cost curve. I will hand it over here to the Group Managing Director to summarize.
Thank you, Uche. I'd just like to take the last slide on this presentation, after which we'll take questions. Having used the past 2.5 years to lay the foundation for the future, we've been able to clean up our balance sheet, and we now consolidate our leadership position as we move into 2012. Our Q1 result for 2012 is a testimony to this. We intend to continue along that line. Why do we believe this is achievable? We believe very strongly that we have enablers that put us in a very unique position. We have a robust corporate governance framework and with a very strong management team. For me, this is the strongest management team I have worked with in the bank, and we are poised and united to continue the transformation journey. We also have a clear industry leadership position today with 14% of total industry assets and 16% of total loans and advances in the industry. This makes us the biggest lender by far in the Nigerian financial landscape. We believe also that our ongoing transformation of driving significant improvements in our business will be sustained, and we are therefore geared to build sustainable and accelerating income streams for the benefit of all stakeholders, including our shareholders. As we move into 2012 and beyond, we will focus on improving and sustaining our funding base and our performance. What we have seen in 2011 into 2012 are sustainable progress, and I believe that the best is yet to come as far as the First Bank is concerned. The elephant is now awake, and the rest of the industry should watch out. In 2012 Q1, we had 83% of our total liabilities based essentially on low-cost deposits of savings accounts and current accounts. We also believe that we have improved our service delivery significantly, but we still would not rest on our oars. We'll continue to re-engineer our processes and also look at the impact of our centralized processing center in improving efficiency and also reducing our costs. As stated earlier on by the CFO, we expect about ₦1 billion savings in our operating costs simply from the migration of some processes and branches into the central processing center. Our resilient asset quality is supported by a very sound risk management framework, and we have cleaned essentially our balance sheet and our loan books as we move into 2012. First Bank presents a very good opportunity today for investment, for a investing public. We are trading at 0.8 times price to book, which is significantly below market average. We expect that this is the right time for anybody to move into the First Bank space in terms of share acquisition. First Bank is definitely underpriced at this moment. We expect that with continuous improvement in our performances, which is sustainable, we will be able to offer superior returns to shareholders starting from the financial year ending December 2012. We believe that our track record of sustained performance and business growth is something that should speak for us at this moment and should be noted and should not be discounted. We are trading, like I said before, at a significant discount, and therefore there is a compelling value proposition for entry into First Bank shares today. I will summarize our strategy going forward into 2012. We will defend our leadership position, which we attained not by error. It was a deliberate strategy. We believe size matters, balance sheet matters in supporting the Nigerian economy. So we will defend that leadership. We will also extend our leadership to cover areas in which we are presently not regarded as being the most efficient, including areas of profitability and return to shareholders. We will, however, in doing all this, balance our long-term objective with short-term goals and make sure that we build and leave a legacy for the future generation of First Bank as we hand over in future. Most importantly, we will defend and ensure that every business in which we choose to play in will be the market leader. Every business that a First Bank or a First Bank group is involved in, First Bank will lead and dominate that market. Thank you very much. This is the end of the presentation. We would like to take questions from you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that your mute function telephone is switched off while your signal to reach your equipment. If you find your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to assemble the queue. Okay, thank you.
Questions, please.
Abiola Rastak, your line is open. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon. This is Abiola Rastak. Thank you very much for the presentation. I must say I'm really impressed. And congratulations on your performance. I have a couple of questions here. The first one has to do with your risk provisions coverage level. I do note that on page 28, the slide 28, you did mention the coverage ratio of 113%. I'm just trying to think through whether it's, because I know, of course, the Q1 numbers are IFRS-based, and I'm trying to think whether it's inclusive of the collateral valuation that you've done, or it's just the impairment charge reserve over the NPLs that gets to 113%. That's the first one. The second one has to do with your tax rate. I note that in the full year 2011, your effective tax rate was around 10.5% and something around 15% in Q1. And I'm just wondering if the tax environment has become more accommodative than I think, because I do know that you did it a lot in terms of treasury bills in Q1. And of course, my expectation of your taxable income is actually something beyond 15% even for Q1 and 10.5% in FY 2011. I would appreciate to have a guidance on this level of effective tax rate regime that you enjoy now, and maybe we should begin to see this as something sustainable over the remaining quarters of the year. The third one has to do with your NPL target on page on slide 33. I think you have an NPL target for 2013 of around 6%, and I'm just wondering whether that is a typographical error or maybe you're expecting a deterioration in your asset quality, because I'm looking at from 2% to 6%, and I'm beginning to wonder in my mind whether there's something to be worried about. Perhaps there's any asset deterioration that you're expecting maybe over the next few quarters or in 2013 precisely. The first one has to do with your partnership with Sanlam. I'm very happy that it's been very successful, but of course I do know that in the life business. And I'm just wondering, do you intend at this point in time to go into the general insurance space? Particularly that we are beginning to see more and more consolidation in that segment of the market, and of course we expect that as regulation begins to get better in that market and people become more aware of the need for general insurance, I don't know whether you are beginning to show interest in the general insurance segment of the business. Thank you.
Thank you. I would answer the last question and then pass on to Remy to talk to answer the question on risk, while Bayo will talk on the effective tax rate. The partnership between First Bank and Sanlam is a very strong partnership, and it's one in which we are proud of. We intend to go into general insurance business, however, without breaching the central bank rules and regulations. So we are looking at all the options. Please note that we intend to go into the holdco mode. So invariably, when we have all the necessary approvals and we implement holdco, the holdco is allowed to go into general insurance business, and at that time, we will be in the general insurance business. We are already exploring the options open to us. I would pass on to Remy to speak to the risk issues.
Okay, the first point, your first question was regarding our Q1 numbers and the provision coverage. The Q1 numbers that we're showing you, as Bayo said earlier on, are NGAAP numbers. They're not IFRS numbers. So you can take them as comparison, pure comparatives with the previous quarters. In terms of the NPL target on slide 33, we had given guidance, and we've given guidance over the last couple of years, of 5-6% in the short term, i.e. up to 2013. We have managed to clear up the... We've managed to improve the quality of the portfolio faster than we anticipated, and we are expecting to come in substantially below 6%. However, we don't want to tamper with the guidance we've given already, which is why we retain the 6%. But I'm pretty sure we will come in below that number.
Yes, Razak, on the tax issue, I mean, it's good that you noted that our effective tax rate was about 10.5 to 11% in the financial statement. Of course, this is actually the impact of two things. Number one is the impact of our tax planning. We had a lot of income coming from FGM bonds and T-bills, the income which are tax exempt, and also we add a lot of investment in fixed assets on which we are earning a lot of capital allowances as against depreciation, and also some reliefs that we gain, which are actually looked at by our professional tax consultants. Of course, what you see in the account is the tax charge for the year, not tax payment for the year. It's in the notes to the tax account. You're going to see the movement in this tax. So we add what we call a deferred tax asset, as against a deferred tax liability, which you have had in the past. Because of the timing differences, this impact has reversed. In fact, in the past, it added to our tax charge for the year, which will have increased our effective tax rate to even above 20%. But for this year just ended, it reversed and it became a deferred tax asset. Of course, this will reduce the tax charge for the year, which is why we have an unusually low effective tax rate. And this has been certified by our professional tax consultant. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, the next question is coming from Muyiwa Oni of Stanbic IBTC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your presentation. I have three questions for you. The first one is on competition. You highlighted in your presentation that you expect stiffer competition in 2012, and my question is really around this segment. I want to know what segments you expect to see, what segment of your business you expect to see the strongest competition, and also know what measures you are taking to mitigate against them or to maintain market share. And my second question is on your customer growth. It's been quite impressive. I think about 300,000 new customers in Q1. And I think my question is really around the drivers of the growth, customer growth. And so I want to know what product is really pulling in the customers, if it's the new mobile banking product. And then also have an idea of the demographic split as well, because I know there's been management strategy to bring in the younger demographics. So I'd want to know where, if we are seeing gains and how much of the new customers are the younger demographic. And still around that question as well, we'd want to know how much of your 8 million customers are actually active. So in terms of percentage, how much of those are active customers? And then my third question is on your PPPs. You highlighted in the strategies part of your presentation that you've currently going into PPPs with state government. So that I want to know what sectors you are comfortable with, and or if it's really based on regions and not sectors. So more or less the drivers of that alliance. Thank you.
Thank you, Muiwa. These are essentially questions for me. This is DC on the line, the CEO. It's normal for anybody to expect that competition will come in and improve at some point. Don't forget that the crisis in the banking industry at some point crippled some of the major competitors. So it's only wise for any player to assume that these issues will be resolved, and as they get resolved, the banks will become cleaner and competition will improve. What have we done? We anticipated that this was going to happen. We did gain market share, and it's only normal for us to put in structures in place to ensure that we don't lose market share when the situation improves. We went on to implement major solutions to improve our customer service and customer turnaround time. And we also went on to introduce the central processing center, which would also increase the speed at which transactions are processed at branches. We also implemented the 24/7 contact center solution, in addition to so many other initiatives to make sure that we are bankable and the customers which we gained during that period do not work out on us. So these were proactive steps that we took, believing very strongly that the competition will increase. And we will defend that market share and that leadership as far as we are concerned as a strategic position that we have taken. We believe that the growth in our customer base is sustainable. It was also deliberate. We went on to improve the ambience of our branches and also improve the quality of our services with a view to attracting the younger generation of Nigerians into the banking hall of First Bank. We did a lot of research into this and found out that we needed to appeal more to that segment of the market. This was one of the reasons why we also opted out of the acquisition, because we thought that we could achieve that movement into that space without necessarily incurring so much additional cost in terms of acquisition of a bank. I can confirm to you that a significant portion of our new customers belong to the youth segment of the market as a deliberate policy. In terms of demographic split, we would tell you that a larger portion of our customer base now are in the young and upwardly mobile market segment. Now, I'll answer your question on PPP. Essentially, these are in areas of infrastructure and infrastructure development, clearly. And for us, we believe that that is a major driver of Nigerian economy as we move on. As challenged as we are in terms of infrastructures, we see opportunities in those challenges. And that's what we've been doing with some of the state governments in terms of improving the infrastructure space. Active rate of customers today is about 85%. Okay? 85%. And dormant would be about 7%. Dormant is about 8%. While inactive is about 7%. So 85% of our customer base today are in fact active customers. 7% of them are inactive, and we are working on reactivating those ones also under a specific project, while about 8% of them are dormant. I hope I've answered your question. Thank you. Ready for the next question?
Yes, sir. We'll now go to Chris Barco of Montpellier Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for the presentation and congratulations on a very strong quarter. I just have two technical questions on understanding the transition to IFRS. And the first question is comparing the old Nigerian GAAP full 2011 numbers with the full 2011 IFRS numbers that you provided yesterday. The Nigerian GAAP numbers had 44.8 billion in provisions, and then the 15.5 billion exceptional on the AMCON transfer, and the IFRS ones only had 15.6 billion of provisions. So I couldn't really understand the difference. So some color there. And then the second question was related to slide 25, where you discussed the quarterly difference between Nigerian GAAP and IFRS. Firstly on the interest income, the larger amount, if you could give the split between interest in suspense and what was more related to credit fees moving out of non-interest income. And then on the bottom bit, loans and advances, the movement to 1.5 billion naira, that is that correct? Because on the accounts it's still 1.3, because obviously otherwise the 0.2 billion interest receivable seems quite a large figure. Sorry, that was quite a lot, but thanks very much for the color. That would be the questions.
Bayo, the CFO, will take this question.
Thank you very much for the question. To take your first question on the differences that you noted in the accounts published, but from the Nigerian GAAP on the 31st December 2011 and the IFRS translation or conversion, you pointed out two areas. The first has to do with the exceptional item on our transaction with AMCON, which is shown at 16.5 billion under Nigerian GAAP. Under IFRS, this was not allowed, so we have to disclose this as part of operating expenses, which is more like transaction loss in terms of asset sales. So you see the operating expenses going up by almost about that same amount. And if you look at the impairment provisions under NGAAP, which is about 35 billion, and under IFRS, it was about 15 billion. Yes, that was actually the consideration for the collateral value of the impaired assets, which is more like the net present value of future realization of these collaterals, which are subjected to some statistical computation, as certified by our subject matter consultant. But however, CBN released a new prudential guideline that also expected that there will be a kind of gain when you do impairment under these two standards. But they cautioned that the difference should not be recognized as a distributable profit, that you have to create a reserve under your equity reserve where it should be restricted. So as you move on, you'll be releasing this into profit. So that's what we actually did, and that's the explanation for that. Then on slide 25, where you notice the difference in interest income, the IFRS showed 73.1 for first quarter, while NGAAP showed 61.7. I mentioned that this is actually a combined impact of three things, three major adjustments. The first was the write back of interest in suspense, which is not recognized under IFRS. Impairment is made on the combined sum of principal and interest. Meanwhile, under NGAAP, impairment is made on the principal while interest is fully suspended. So for us to do an impairment on the combined sum, we have to write back the interest in suspense, then we now computed impairment on the combined sum in the customer's account. That's number one. Then number two, we talked about the effective interest rate, which IFRS states that there are some credit facilities related fees, like processing fees, management fees, and so on and so forth, which we currently recognize as non-interest income. They should be considered as part of the effective interest rate and should be amortized over the lifespan of the facility. Until the facility is fully paid, IFRS is of the opinion that these fees are not fully earned. So we have made adjustments for that. That has the implication of increasing our interest income and reducing our fee and commission, which is why you see this as a contra adjustment. And the last one has to do with interest on staff loans, which are given to staff at less than commercial rates. IFRS states that we need to gross up this to commercial rates and include it as part of interest income to see how the business is performing. If you give a subsidy on interest to staff, it is actually a staff cost, which should be recognized as an operating expense. So the contra of that is in operating expense. Those are actually the three major adjustments that went into there. This slide has essentially simplified the adjustment. It is more complex than what I've just explained. But just to give you an idea of a guidance of what constitutes the difference between these two numbers. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Yes, sir. We will now go to Ronak Gadia of X2A. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thanks. That's Ronak Gadia from Exotic. Just continuing from the discussion you just had, if we take away the IFRS adjustments from your numbers and we take away $9.2 billion, is it correct to assume that on a Nigerian GAAP basis, your profits would have been down by almost 30% on a year-on-year basis? My second question is, again, largely technical. On the interest income for last year, how much of that was write back from interest suspended on accounts sold to Amcon? How much did you write back? I've got about two more questions. The other thing I have is about your cost cutting. I think management's been talking about cost cutting measures for the best part of 2 years. I wonder if that is a bit of a red herring, because if you compare your quarterly numbers, costs have been increasing at a cumulative rate of 8% per quarter. It doesn't seem like operating expenses are coming down. They are increasing quite rapidly. In fact, they're increasing faster than the inflation rate. So I wonder if your cost-cutting measures are effective at all. And lastly, how much mark-to-market loss do you expect on your available-for-sale securities for the full year? Thank you.
Bayer will take the question, the CFO.
Yes, if I heard you very well, you actually have three questions. The first has to do with the impact of IFRS. The table we provided has shown the major adjustment is not exhaustive, like I mentioned during my presentation. And you add a $9 billion upside based on adoption of IFRS that can authoritatively give you the numbers under NGAAP, which we did not publish because it was not required by law to be published. Our profit, group profit for the year under NGAAP is actually about $21 billion. The first quarter profit under NGAAP compared to $16 billion of Q1 2011. So there's still about 37 to 40% increase in profitability without IFRS.
Okay.
Then the question on the increase in OPEX, the 30% quarter-on-quarter increase, there are basically three things that I will talk about, because despite that increase of 30%, there is still a 30% drop in our cost-to-income ratio, which is our basic guide, from 70% to 60% in between the two quarters. The first one, the driver, is actually the deposit insurance premium. If you notice that we grew our deposit by about 35% year on year, 2010 to 2011, our deposit insurance premium is computed on the closing balance of previous year, which is 31st December 2011. So this has increased our premium insurance by a certain amount, number one. Number two is the Amcon resolution cost fund, which is also a function of our balance sheet size. If you see that we grew our balance sheet size significantly between 2010 and 2011, and we are required to make an accrual of 0.3%, that's 30 basis points on this balance sheet side. That also grew RWA. The other drivers are two. Number one is the increase in the activities of the bank. I mentioned the quantum of increments in our branch offices, which we grew up close to 40 locations in 2011 alone. And we also grew our ATM by close to we grew our ATM recently, and we also grew our POS significantly. These increases in business offices and transaction locations also require infrastructure acquisition and maintenance. It requires staffing and a lot of other overhead, including security and cash movement. All this, coupled with the general inflation rate, actually led to increase in cost. But we have done all this as efficient as possible, which is what is reflected in our cost-to-income ratio. All these new additions to cost have generated more than proportionate increase in our revenue, which is actually our major focus. Our focus is not, our strategy is not cost reduction, it's of cost optimization. When you restrict cost, you are restricting business growth. We don't want to do that. It stifles business. So we spend, but for additional $1 that we spend, it must generate more than proportionate increase in additional revenue. Then, in terms of the mark-to-market loss that we expect for the rest of the year in our available-for-sale bonds, we're taking quite a quantum in terms of mark-to-market, both for the year ended 2011 and the Q1 2012. Under NGAAP, we charge to P&L. Under IFRS, we took it through equity. Both ways, they've reduced our shareholders' funds. And we don't really expect, given the current rate regime, that we're going to have any major mark-to-market loss for the rest of the year, at least not that enough to impact our forecast for the rest of the year. Thank you.
Okay, sorry, just going back to the IFRS thing. So is it fair to assume that there was a big bump in the first quarter in the interest income? It was just a one-off and it won't be sustained for the rest of the year? Or will that continue for the rest of the year?
It will continue for the rest of the year.
The boost in interest income from interest in suspense?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It will continue for the rest of the year. Because the way it happens now is most banks are required to continue restating their NGAAP into IFRS until the system processes and every other thing is converted to on transactions are processed under IFRS. So we'll continue doing our impairment on prudential guidelines on one side and on IFRS based on reporting. So as we suspend interest income under NGAAP, as we are restating into IFRS, we'll be adding it back. So we see this trend continuing for the year. But the impact is not distributable, like I mentioned. It is restricted in what is called statutory credit reserve, that's SAR. So it will continue for the rest of the year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, as a reminder, if you have any questions, please press star 1. We'll now go to Nathando Ndeble of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the call, gentlemen. A couple of questions from my side. First of all, is there scope for recoveries out of the 88 billion you wrote off from your book last year? And if so, have you actually seen any recoveries in the first quarter of this year? And then also, I guess, looking at your strong deposit growth, maybe you could just tell us a little bit more about the drivers of that and the outlook, and whether you'll continue to grow at this sort of similar rate. And then could you give us figures for your gross loan book under IFRS for FY11, first quarter 2011 and the first quarter 2012, please? Thank you.
Remy will take the question, the chief risk officer.
Okay. All right, then. I will take them reverse, as I recall them. You wanted to know what the gross loans were for first quarter 2012, full year 2011, and first quarter 2011 in IFRS terms.
Yeah.
Essentially, there's no real difference.
Okay.
The interest is in principle, so I think you can work with the numbers that you actually have under NGAAP. There's no major difference.
Okay, well, we don't have the numbers. Sorry, we don't have them for the first quarter of this year. Can you give us the gross number then, just for the first quarter 12?
President, the first quarter, hold on a minute. Okay, I see what you mean. We've shown you, no, gross loans for first quarter is 1.2 trillion. If you look on slide 27, on slide 27,
yeah,
in the pie chart that talks to gross loans and advances, March 2012, bank only, you've got 1.2 trillion.
Okay, thank you.
And similarly, in the SCU's breakdown at the top of that page, the bar chart. You also asked about recoveries. You asked about recoveries of the 88 billion that we wrote off last year and what recoveries we made in the first quarter. I don't generally disclose my recovery number, but I would say that it's fair, and much of what we've written off last, much of what we wrote off in 2010, going to 2011, we recovered a fair amount, both through AMCON and through recovery efforts. In the first quarter of 2012, we have made substantial recoveries, but I really am not prepared to disclose the exact figure.
I mean, could you give us a range at all of what fair means?
Not really.
Well, yeah, we'll get back to you on that number.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we'll get back to you. And in any case, at the end of the year, when we are publishing the numbers, the recovery figure is an item that must be disclosed on the face of the public profit and loss account. So you would always have the information anyway. But Yemisu, the head of investor relations, will provide the information to you if you reach her after this conference call.
The other question was on deposits, which is...
drivers also. Deposit growth.
Onche will take the question on drivers of deposit growth.
Sure. I think to start with, there's been a lot of work in First Bank to really deliberately target deposits. As the group managing director said, this has gone hand in hand with our customer acquisition growth. So the redesigning of our branches, the introducing the specializations that occurred and products that have been tailored specifically to customers. For example, we have a product that targets the mass market that allows them to open an account almost instantly with a very low balance. We have instant issuance of cards. We're one of the only banks that allows, in which you can go into a branch, walk out of the branch, literally with an ATM card that's functional. So a number of innovations have really enhanced our value proposition and allowed us to be the bank of first choice for the very large retail opportunity. In tandem with that, we will see more of this year than last year, but we've focused very strongly on network expansion. And this is more of a phenomenon you'll see manifesting this year, but that has also been tied very positively with respect to deposit growth. We've also had a favorable environment last year. There was a quasi-second flight to safety as well, as the fate of some of the intervened banks and the nationalized banks was uncertain. So we had the wind in our sails as well. But we expect to sustain our very strong growth year on year.
Next question, please.
Now we'll go to Emmanuel Boake of Fairtree Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys, for the presentation and for the opportunity to talk to you. Just two questions that I have. Considering that you guys are on a cost-driving exercise and trying to maintain costs, yet you've grown branch and your branch network by 21 branches in the first quarter and obviously to look to grow more. I mean, perhaps you're going to explain the strategy behind that. And also my next question is, considering that also now in the first quarter we saw the changing mix in deposits, and we had an increase in term deposits. I mean, do you expect your cost of deposits, cost of funding, to increase for the remainder of the year, considering that you're going to get a more expensive deposit profile as well?
Thank you. We do have a strategy to increase our touch points. Empirical studies have shown that there is direct positive correlation between between your number of branches and the size of your deposits, particularly for the retail segment of the market. We should always remember that First Bank is a brand that is loved. And the reason why sometimes we don't have new customers in some areas is probably because we are not present in those areas. So we took a deliberate strategy to increase our presence in urban and semi-urban areas, especially as a means of capturing new customers and increasing our retail deposit growth. And this has worked for us. Yes, there will be some increases in costs as a result of the increase in deposits, but like the CFO said, it's not necessarily good strategy to defend costs. What's important is to make sure that for every deposit that you get, you have a positive spread after taking all costs into consideration, both direct costs and indirect costs of utilizing the deposit. We will increase our number of branches in 2012 by 130 branches, carefully selected locations where we are either not present or we are stretched. And this is already working for us, and we met a Q1 2012 target. We intend to continue with this strategy and deliver on the total number for 2012. But it's a deliberate strategy aimed at increasing our market share and also improve our deposits. These are major sources of low-cost deposits of savings and current accounts. Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll now go to Emmanuel Boake of Fairtree Capital. Please go ahead. Well, just 1 second. It appears that question is gone. We'll now go to Brent Malahi of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, guys. Just two questions for me. Could you just highlight the two key risks to the current cost of funding level? And then secondly, could you give us the number in terms of the lending you do via the debt capital markets, i.e., the loans you subscribe of corporates and lower tier government? Thank you.
Can you repeat the question, please? We didn't quite get your question. The first question.
Can you hear me?
Yes, please.
Yeah, sure. So the first question is the two key risks to your current level of cost of funding. And then secondly, the lending you do to the private sector and semi-government, could you give us the number that you do via the debt capital markets, i.e., you subscribing to bonds issued by state government and corporates? Thank you.
I will ask the treasurer, Ine, who is here, to answer the question on lending to the government by way of bonds, while Fire will take the question on the cost of funds.
Okay, with respect to lending to the public sector or state governments, right?
It's lending via the debt capital markets rather than a straight loan. So, i.e., when you subscribe to bonds issued by corporates, giving them a direct loan.
I understand your question now. Those are treated as treasury investments, and quite frankly, they are very, very limited. As you may be aware, in the Nigerian market, the corporate bond market is relatively underdeveloped. There are very few issues out there, and in many cases, the issue sizes are too small to be of interest to us from a treasury standpoint. So it's extremely limited in with that regard for both the corporate and state government bond issues.
Would this be an avenue of opportunity for the banks, depending on whether the risk mitigations are better via this way versus a straight loan? Is that not the case?
The truth about it will be driven by, to my mind, two clear factors. One is where will it be issued in terms of what is the yield on the bond, and then two, also what is size, because the truth is, for how many corporates can issue a bond today in this market of meaningful size to grant it liquidity? So that will always be an inhibitor. So you're probably better off just getting it as a straight loan. And then if you look at the corporate today, the corporates will typically still tend to try to tap the loan market rather than the bond market because of the associated costs involved in issuing the bond. For the state, it's purely a coupon game. As long as they issue over the sovereign, why not, if it makes sense? But they have the capacity, some of the states have the capacity to issue in size, not all.
Okay, thank you. And then just the risks to the cost of funding.
Yes, the first question, I will answer in the affirmative to tell you that we don't, in fact, there is no tier 2 risk to our cost of funding. If you listen to my presentation, I mentioned that between deposit and capital, we have 85% of the bank's funding base, and the tier 2 to tier 1 ratio is about 90-10. So what happened is our tier 2 capital is mainly foreign currency holding, which we recently paid, and it's just 10% of our capital. So paying out $175 million does not really constitute any threat or risk to the bank because of our impressive base of domiciliary account balances. And given the fact that we just disposed our CWOF an asset account to AMCON, which is a release of almost $600 to the bank's kitty, $600 million to the bank's kitty, $105 million would not constitute any threat to the bank. So we don't see much of a risk to our cost of fund coming from tier 2.
No. The question was really because the cost of deposits is currently around 1.6 as per slide 10. I'm just questioning how sustainable that is at that relatively low level.
Sorry, maybe I misunderstood the question. Well, like I mentioned, again, if you look at the Q1 presentation, you see that the cost of funds inched up a bit by 0.1%, which is actually reflective of the high interest rate environment. In 2011, we were able to bring down our cost of funds from 3.2% in 2010 to like 1.6%. But of course, beginning from this year, based on the interest rate regime on T-bills and the federal government bonds, depositors now have alternatives where they can put their money and they will earn higher yield. So that, has already impacted the bank's cost of funds. But because we have very little portion of our deposits in tenured funds, it didn't really impact us so much. And we intend to keep our focus on this low-cost fund of current accounts and savings accounts, even though there will still be some increases in tenured deposits. But on the long run, there's going to be a mix of this cost of funds. So we don't see the cost of funds increasing significantly. But I'm not assuring that we are going to sustain it at the level that it is today. Thank you very much.
Can I just is it fair to say that if there is pressure, it would most likely come from competition rather than regulation?
Yes, essentially so. We did say that we will defend our market leadership. So long as we continue to have positive spreads on those deposits, we'll continue to intermediate in that area. We will not give up.
Okay,
good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll now go to Duke Essiam of IFC. Please go ahead. Mr. Essiam, your line is open. Please ask your question. Okay, we'll move on from Mr. Essiam. We'll go to Obube Aguda of Standard Chartered. Very sorry for the pronunciation. Open your line now.
Good afternoon, gentlemen and ladies. I have a question concerning loan growth, specifically with regards to public sector. On slide 27, we noticed that loan growth in the public sector was actually the highest between full year 2010 and first quarter 2012. I'm wondering if that's a deliberate strategy. How far are we going to see the loan growth in public sector, and what specifically are you doing in terms of managing the risks in that sector? Thank you.
We are a very strong bank in the public sector space, and a critical driving factor in that segment is the ability to support the various organs of government. However, because of our very robust risk management framework, we do have an internal limit of a certain percentage. The CBN limit of total public sector loans to total aggregate loans is 10%. I can confirm to you that we are well within that limit, and we do not intend to bust that limit. So we are quite guided on this. And the NPL in that sector is 0%, if that comforts you. So we are within 10% of the public sector loans as guided by central banks. We will not exceed that limit, but we will also defend our relationships in those segments of the market.
All right, that's all.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll now go to Rainer Orth of Cura Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I've got two questions around the OPEX line. Just wanted to get a better view of how financial year 12 will look. I look at the staff costs, and I can see on your first quarter there is about 21.6 billion of staff costs, and I compare it to last year's 59.8. So if I analyze that staff cost, I get to about a 33% increase in staff costs for the year. Does that seem realistic? And then the second question is, I look at last year's other operating expenses, and it's at about 93.9 billion. And then first quarter this year, you only did 18.7. So I'm thinking you'd at least do last year's other operating expenses as a minimum. Plus inflation, or is that also realistic? Thank you.
Let me take the question on staff costs. We've always believed that the staff are the greatest assets that we have, and that well-motivated staff are in line to deliver superior returns to you. We've moved away from a bank which was essentially not competitive in terms of emolument. So a bank where virtually everybody in the banking sector wants to work. It's a chicken and egg situation. You can see the tremendous performance that we achieved in 2012. With a demotivated workforce, you cannot sustain that. So quite frankly, our staff costs are costs that we believe that are relevant and that will deliver superior returns to us. So we intend to keep the best workforce in the industry, and we intend to keep them well motivated. What's important, however, is to ensure that you sweat the workforce and ensure that they deliver improved returns. You can see the impact of this on our declining cost-income ratio and the growth in our business in our businesses. This can only be done when you have a well-motivated workforce. So, quite frankly, we think the strategy is deliberate and it's working for us. I think your next question is on the operating expenses. The CFO did mention also that we are in growth mode, essentially. And when you are in growth mode, you are spending money to expand your business. What's important is to ensure that every incremental amount of money, naira, that you spend results into an improved higher rate of income so that you make a spread on every naira of money that you spend. So quite frankly, we think that we're on the right path. We will be very efficient in our costs. We are not saying we will not be. But what's important, however, is to make sure that we are very wise in every kobo that we spend. And so far, it has worked for us. Achieving a 10% reduction in cost-income ratio is not by accident. It's by deliberate strategy. It's much more important to drive up your revenue at this point in time to dilute the impact of increasing costs.
Just a follow-up on the second question. Percent of last year's other operating expenses. Is there a reason for the low level of spending in the first quarter? Because I imagine you'd at least do the 93.8 this year as well, plus inflation.
Okay, let me just mention something briefly here. We also need to appreciate the seasonality of some of this spending. We have just considered one quarter out of four. So if you want to do an extrapolation of our cost for the first quarter of 18, multiplied by 4, definitely it's going to be lower than the 93.9, which you called the base for last year. I'm not saying we're going to surpass this, but it is not a direct correlation. If you appreciate the seasonality in here, it's actually to our own benefit to incur less cost during the current year than last year. But we are not promising that it's going to be lower by that magnitude, because 90 multiplied by 4, it's about 76 billion compared to 93.9. That is almost 30% drop in other operating overheads. We are not promising that. But we know that this thing flows through as the quarters come by, so there's seasonality built into it. Thank you.
Do you have a guidance on what your OPEX growth will be for the year? as a
we'll rather guide on what our cost to income ratio will be for the rest of the year, which we have guided as below 60%, because costs are activity driven. As we open more branches, expand our transaction locations, we will incur costs in terms of money, maintenance, and security. So there will be cost growth. But bearing expansion, we guide on cost growth of below the general inflation rate. Bearing expansion, which is why it's simpler for us to guide on the cost to income ratio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question.
Yes, sir. Today's last question is coming from Mr. Mandela Otaru of Standard Chartered. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, good evening, everyone. Thanks for the presentation. My question, I have three questions. Quick one is, do you hope to integrate your subsidiary that you just acquired, Banco de Internacional de Credit? And that's one. Secondly is, where else do you see opportunities in Africa? Then the third question is, would you be willing to go into a strategic alliance in future?
Thank you. I would allow the chief strategist to start to take the question.
Okay. With respect to Banque Internationale de Credit in the DRC, yes, indeed, there's an integration process that is ongoing. It's been very carefully thought through and planned. And it's happening in phases. The first phase is getting them to realize the synergies, the most obvious synergies, are both on the revenue and the cost side that exist with First Bank of Nigeria. The next phase is starting to harmonize our processes and systems across the board, so migrating them to an IT platform, the same platform Pinnacle that we use, ensuring harmonized processes and approaches both on the commercial and operational side. And then the third phase is when we actually move to centralized management of SBUs, et cetera, where you might have someone in Nigeria responsible for corporate banking globally, which by that time would include a portfolio of countries. But the work is well underway, and we are already seeing some of the benefits of that in the DRC. Second question was priority nations. We're not at liberty to disclose at this stage a specific nation, but rest assured we did a very detailed analysis of nations across Africa, and we can say confidently there's a portfolio of about 10 that we prioritized over the next 5 years. And these are typically nations that have very strong and growing economies, sizable enough to be meaningful to us, and strong opportunity in each of these nations to be a major tier one player. We do not plan to be a marginal player in a lot of countries, and the cost of entry itself makes it not worth our while. So you can expect us to continue to target these nations and enter on the premise of a very strong economic case to be made, typically using inorganic expansion in line with our strategy to be a multi-local bank and be relevant wherever we are with local participation in shareholding and in management and to put shareholder value above everything else that we do.
I think that's the last question.
The third question, sorry, is would you... Sorry?
What form of alliance were you talking about? You just mentioned strategic alliances.
No, like we've seen with Ecobank kind of partnering in terms of with NetBank and so on and so forth. As you migrate, as you go into all these countries or something.
Let me confirm to you that as far as Nigeria is concerned, our strategy is to grow organically but in an accelerated mode. As far as the rest of Africa is concerned, we would not go into any acquisition or in any of those markets where we do not have majority control. Now, if there are alliances that give us that majority control, we are open to look at them, but clearly we must be in control. Our preference is to do brownfield entry because we want to be regarded as multi-local bank. That's a local bank in multiple environments. We like to partner with the locals in that environment, and if those locals are into strategic relationships, of course, it's not a deal breaker, but that's our strategic focus. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much to everybody. I think this has been a very wonderful call. We look forward to seeing you on the floor of the exchange. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's presentation. We thank you very much for your participation. You may now disconnect. Thank you.